Bonk.
Dan.
How are you? There's supposed to be an R in there, and I think I started sounding like, who's the friends man that says, how you doing?
Joey Tribbiani.
Is that Matt LeBlanc?
Yes.
Yeah, he's the how you doing guy. I didn't mean to do that.
I know.
I still don't know if I've seen a full episode of Friends.
I actually watched the entire show.
I remember that with your, you know, for all the things we talk about on Painting the Stream that we watch specifically for the podcast and we talk about, there is a amazing amount of shows that you have just burn straight through.
That's because I've been working remotely for the past over a year now. And, you know, it just, you're doing work. It's nice to have something on the background. Friends was astoundingly mediocre.
Let's get 5-second reviews. Let me just name some shows I know you've watched at home.
Okay.
In rapid fire lightning round. Friends.
Right. Like I said, astoundingly mediocre. A couple funny moments here and there. But it's
Killing Eve.
Really great, interesting, complex story. Relationship between these two female characters, an assassin and
Handmaid's Tale.
You know, it's kind of brutal to watch. I feel like it's far extended beyond the source material. So now it's
The Sopranos.
Amazing show. It took me 15 years to watch it. I feel like I'm the last Italian from Bergen County to ever watch that show. I grew up just an exit away from the Bada Bing Club, which is actually called Satin Dolls in Route 17. It's masterful. I absolutely love that show.
Excellent.
I wish I could go back to not having seen it so I could watch it again for the first time.
You got some extra time on that one because A, I know you love it, and B, I ran out of shows that I know you just like super binged. I know you watched a lot of that Amy Sedaris show recently. You've done a lot of British Bake Off.
Love British Bake Off.
That's such
a great feel-good show.
It seems like great background stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I'll never forget, I always tie British Bake Off to when we first moved into New York City. And I remember like the very first night we moved in, you had to go to some wrestling show. And I was home alone with Puppy Razor. And I was eating Pocky and watching Great British Bake Off amidst boxes and empty boxes and things all over the place as we were in the process of moving in.
Well, the TV sat on the floor, right?
Yep.
yeah, before we had the stand built.
Yeah.
I remember there were some there was some sort of issue with the stand. Like, we bought one and it didn't have the right screw or something.
No, it was like missing an integral part.
Yeah.
We bought it through Wayfair, which like things don't ship directly from like a Wayfair warehouse. Like, they're from
right
all over the place. And it's like, oh, we can't really help you. I mean, we'll try. And it took like 2 months to get the part that we needed.
Something insane like that. And it drove me nuts because like when you first move into a new place, one of the first things you want is to like get things situated as fast as
especially
possible.
Especially the big stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And that's like a centerpiece of the living room is the TV. That's where we play our games. We watch our stuff. We watch stuff for Painting the Stream. Granted, at the time, I don't think we'd started it yet.
No.
But you know what I mean.
Yes.
We use the TV a lot. And it's just sitting there. And all the other pieces were there. So all the boards for the stand were just like sitting there. And oh, we got big problems, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Big problems in the Reichert household.
Yes.
But now that problem has long since been resolved. We've moved out of that apartment, and now
now we have our own TVs.
Yeah.
Both standing on things that aren't the ground.
Stands, yeah.
Yep. We play games on those TVs. We watch things on those TVs.
What you do with TVs is what we do with TVs.
Yeah, it's not crazy. It's not like we're turning them sideways and like using them like a hibachi grill. Like, you know, we're watching stuff on it. You know, we're not putting some burners underneath it. Heating up our pasta, you know.
Watch what you say, Dan. You're getting pretty controversial here.
That sounds kind of fun. I wonder if that'd be some good macaroni.
It doesn't heat up. Like, it doesn't. I mean, I'm sure it gets
if you
a little
put fire
warm
under it, it would get hot.
When we were kids, we used to go to this buffet in Lodi, New Jersey. And I don't think it's there anymore, but they had like a hibachi grill part and you could like go and there was like a bunch of raw meats and vegetables and like sauces that you could put on and then you give it to the guy and he'd whip it up on the hibachi grill. And one time my brothers gave him like a piece of cake to put like amidst all the other meat and stuff like that just as a stupid joke. It's actually a real asshole thing to do, but they were dumb kids. And the guy was yelling at him saying like, no cake on the grill. And it like permanently burned the grill.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Jerk kid thing to do.
Yeah, it was an asshole thing to do. Oh,
they should go back and apologize today.
Well, I don't think it's around anymore.
No. Hey, speaking of things you can do on your TV, you could watch 1989's The Abyss by James Cameron.
On HBO Max.
You could. Did we check? I don't know if it might be on other stuff you could check, but it's definitely on HBO Max, which we should touch on since this is our first thing that we actually watched on it.
Yes.
And covered. That HBO Max seems good.
Didn't we talk about this in the last podcast?
We mentioned that we had gotten it. So I think we probably already put it over, so we don't have to go overboard here. They're not paying us.
Yeah, I remember you saying that last time, too. So yeah,
that
I think
sounds about right.
We did expound on it.
But this is our first official episode, and yeah, it turns out it's got a lot of good stuff
great.
On there.
But for the record, I think The Abyss, just from based on what Google tells me, is also on Prime Video and Hulu, so HBO Go. So you have a lot of options if you don't have Max.
Seems like it is an available movie if you would like to watch it. It is a very James Cameron, very late 80s, sci-fi, psychological, seafaring.
There's a lot of... I feel like this movie is one of those movies that has distinct parts.
Yes. Yeah. You can easily separate it between, like... kind of pre-supernatural, and then some... Well,
it's like, I feel like the first part is man versus nature. It's them trying to, like, deal with, you know, all the difficulties that come with being in the deep sea, I guess.
Yeah, they're in submarines going pretty deep there.
Yeah, they're real deep, and all the issues that go with that. And then it's, like, more like man versus man part, where they deal with the guy who's losing his mind.
And Michael Biehn down there, being a weirdo with a mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the final... part is kind of, you know, the dramatic climax, or the emotional climax, at least.
Yeah, not even really a versus, but we'll get to what that entails. I could see it being polarizing. We'll get to it. So basically, you got, let's lay the groundwork here.
Let's lay it down.
Submarine, USS Montana, goes down. Ran into some crazy thing underwater, right?
Mm-hmm.
Crashes. Government wants to go recover it. Turns out it's got some nukes in it.
Yes.
And so they need to get down there quick because apparently the Russians are in the area and they're going for it too.
This is amidst Cold War stuff.
Yes. Late 80s Cold War stuff. And there's also a hurricane topside. So there's kind of a rush to get down there and get those nukes. Pretty cool setup for a movie. And so they send in, on a little submersible, they send a team of Navy SEALs led by Lieutenant Coffey, played by Michael Biehn. Who I have long been a Michael Biehn fan. As a teenager, I used to send, I would cut out pictures from Entertainment Weekly of many, many celebrities that I admired and sent it to Michael Biehn trying to get an autograph back.
Oh, that's so
cute. I didn't get it from him. I got some from Schwarzenegger, Jim Carrey, Conan, Nicolas Cage, Travolta. I wish I still had them. They're all just like...
Wow, Michael Biehn was the one that...
Michael Biehn didn't. No, wow. Michael Biehn didn't. Bonnie Bedelia from Die Hard didn't. Yeah, but I don't think I got anything back from Michael Biehn. I bought a book from Borders that was like celebrities' addresses. And they're all like, but they were like fan, like they're P.O. boxes or whatever.
Okay.
And so I would just like, I got Entertainment Weekly every week. Turns out that's a lot of pictures you can cut out. And, but yeah, I always thought Michael Biehn was super cool because he's been in a bunch of James Cameron stuff. Terminator 1, probably his like most top build.
John Connor, right?
No, John Connor's father, Kyle Reese.
Right.
So because in the first one, John Connor isn't born yet, so they send Kyle Reese back in time to protect Sarah Connor and impregnates her with John Connor. It's very confusing. But he's awesome in that. He's in a cameo in Terminator 2 that did not show up in the finished movie. It's only in the director's cut. Aliens. He is Colonel or Lieutenant Hicks. He's a big, he's like the biggest non-Sigourney Weaver dude in Aliens. And then The Rock, where we also saw him interact with Ed Harris.
Rock was James Cameron?
I'm sorry, I was going off James Cameron at the end there. Yeah. Also The Rock by Michael Bay, of course. So just like in The Rock, he has a minor role in which he's mainly screaming back and forth at Ed Harris. But Michael Bay is kind of the good guy and, Ed Harris is kind of the bad guy. Shades of Grey in The Rock, you know, who's really good, you know, Noble Cause is all that. The Rock's a great movie. But in this, it's a little more cut and dry. Ed Harris, oil dude.
Yeah. Seems like a solid guy. An everyman, has some difficulties with his wife. They seem to be in the midst of a divorce. Maybe they're separated. And that is actually the reason why he, at the very beginning of the movie, throws his wedding ring into a toilet bowl, which has that, like, blue sterilizing fluid.
Yeah, it's gross. I know it's cleaning, but it looks
gross.
You're
still sticking your hand in shit.
So the blue goes into the poop water? You don't, like, flush the poop and then put the blue in?
No, you've never been in a porta potty that has the blue in there already, and you poop into it.
Oh, that's true. So it's just, like, supposed to sit there with it? It doesn't really flush.
No, because those, they don't flush.
I don't know much about toilets.
I think maybe it helps the smell. Maybe it helps, I don't know. But, he sticks his hand in there to get his ring back. It's really gross. And we're constantly reminded of it through the most dramatic moments of the film, because his hand is permanently stained with the blue fluid, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, it's good that he fished that ring out, because it ends up really saving him, saving his ass at a certain point in the movie later on. When he, remember his, the door is closing on his hand?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, it helps him.
Yeah.
I didn't really put that together. Speaking of
and
Ed Harris,
he kisses the ring.
That's
symbolic.
Right. He's like, "Mah," yeah. Speaking of Ed Harris and doors, there's another rock thing that reminded me. Both in The Abyss and The Rock, Ed Harris is looking through a big door that closes with like a little porthole on it, while one of his men or one of his teammates is on the other side, horribly dying. And Ed Harris is like, "No," you know, because remember when they're sealing the VX nerve gas at the beginning, the one guy's getting all bubbly and stuff, and Ed Harris is like, you know,
yeah.
But then here, just there's a lot of drowning in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of people drown and have a... There's that panic attack underwater that one of the big dude has pretty early on.
Right, yeah. So Ed Harris's crew, they're like an oil rigging crew. Are they Navy? I don't think they're in the Navy. Are they?
No. So I read that originally Cameron had the whole team be scientists, but he thought it wouldn't have that much mass appeal. So he made it basically like a privately owned oil company's submersible that was made up of everyman.
Okay.
So.
And then so the rig that – the really valuable rig that had sunken – one of the, I guess, lead designers or the woman kind of responsible for the technology was Ed Harris, whose name is also Bud in the movie.
Yeah,
was his wife. So
Dr. Lindsay Brigman.
Yeah, so they're working together, and that's, you know, where a lot of fun drama comes into play.
A lot of marital tension.
One of my favorite parts of the movie was in like the very beginning of the movie when they first do the deep dive into the sunken. What would you call that rig? The USS Montana?
The submarine, right?
That's a big submarine.
I thought it was a submarine, like a
Navy
submarine.
I don't know if like submarines are little things or if that was like something else. But
submarines are big.
They're big. Okay. Yeah. Well, when they first go in there and you see like, because these are just they're not, you know, military guys who have been exposed to a ton of death. They're not desensitized to it. So they're going underwater into this ship that had sunk and seeing all these dead bodies, these like freshly dead bodies that are just floating around. And it's so creepy. And one of the weirdest parts for me, and I don't know why this stuck out to me, but they're like, there's this one part where, you know, obviously it's pitch black down there. And the only light comes from the light that they have on their bodies. And you see them go up the stairwell, and the stairwell is just, like, encased in darkness except for when the light hits it. And it just made me feel weird thinking about how, like, you know, I'm sure over many, many, many years, algae will accumulate, and eventually the area will erode, the ship will erode if it's just left there. But, you know, it's just thinking about something like that so deep underwater, it's just, like, where no human could live naturally, you know what I mean? Just... everyone else is dead, but there's still this stairwell here and like everything else remains except for, you know, there's just these dead bodies floating around. And it's, yeah. And I feel like the big guy who kind of can't handle the seeing all the death around him is almost a surrogate for us, because it's like, you know, it's, can you imagine seeing that? Like seeing dead bodies under normal circumstances, not that we have, but I would imagine it's pretty traumatic, and seeing them float around and just moving. It's like hard not, like, how would you look away if they're moving?
No, you'd have to.
Yeah.
And they must be like bloated and look gross.
Oh yeah. I water decomposition is especially grisly, because all the bodies, they just kind of assume the T pose and puff out and kind of start to look like fish themselves. It's really fucking nasty.
It's, in a way, I know this is a much campier movie, but Event Horizon, it's that similar thing of like, we're going to this ship that's just been floating around in space, and it's probably not good what happened to the crew. And they go in there, and of course, it's weird hell possession tearing their eyes out and stuff, but it's still the same, like, oh, it's a spooky ghost ship thing, and there's just bodies everywhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I like, in the very beginning of the movie, and while they're exploring this ship, is when we get like the first suggestion of something maybe supernatural, because the ship goes down after it looks like a beam of light or a ball of light kind of goes near it, and then like all the electrical stuff goes out, or I don't know if it would be electrical or whatever it is, goes out, and then, you know, things start to break down, water floods in, and everyone dies. And then while they're in the course of exploring it, the guy who's kind of sitting aside and like hanging back and, you know, trying to handle his overwhelmed anxiety naturally, witnesses this big, like, mystical looking engine, organic looking engine.
Yeah, you kind of see it in like reflections in his helmet. Like, you don't get a real good look at it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like a floaty electric just a shifting nebulous thing of light, mm-hmm. you know, and energy. It's honestly the way they treat, spoilers, there's aliens in this movie. The way they treat aliens in the Abyss is similar to how they treat Jaws and mm-hmm. Jaws, where it's like, yeah, you see a fin or you see the aftermath of a shark attack, but you don't really see a bunch of the shark or the aliens until like the last bit mm-hmm. of the movie, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of similar in that way.
Yeah, although I will say, unlike Jaws, where the shark was a threat throughout the whole movie, it was the basis of the whole movie, I feel like the aliens aspect of this film, and this was the part that kind of I wasn't a huge fan of, it seemed so removed from the rest of the movie. Like, it seemed kind of like tacked on, and obviously we'll get to it, but especially at the end, it's kind of like a deus ex machina type of thing where it's just like, oh, aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
Alien logic.
Yeah. Like, I think there's more time given to the interpersonal, like you mentioned, the, like, man versus man stuff. And that's primarily in the form of the Navy SEALs, who Michael Biehn, Lieutenant Coffey, is not handling things well.
Well, it's apparently one of the effects of this pressure...
High-pressure nervous syndrome.
Yeah, it's your body reacts really crazily, obviously, to different levels of pressure and oxygen and stuff like that. And I guess certain people are more susceptible to this condition. And one of the symptoms is like paranoia and like not being able to think clearly and getting the jitters and the shakes. And it's clear from the jump that like he's suffering from this because he's shaking, but he's still kind of level-headed in the beginning at least. And then, you know, this is a guy who's in possession of nukes and he's losing his mind.
Yeah, underwater. It's a good situation
that,
for everyone.
The whole Michael Biehn storyline was my favorite.
I thought
that was so compelling. And like when they would just have him alone in a room just like staring at something, it was just so creepy.
Yeah, or like slicing his arm with a knife.
Oh yeah, that was
like,
so weird. Yeah. I just loved how weird that was.
Yeah, and he has like, I'm used to seeing Michael Biehn as like, you know, oh, he's Kyle Reese, he's fighting for humanity, or you know, he's this good guy.
Yeah.
And he is a great paranoid bad guy.
Yeah.
There's this intensity to him that's kind of like, oh, this, and he's got this like weird mustache. He's just like a weird looking, he seems like a good crazy guy.
Yeah, well, he was very clammy and
shaky.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, like, how the potential for destruction that, like, you know, obviously we're just not meant to be in the deep sea. You know, it will destroy our bodies. But not only the physical stuff, but the mental effects it can have, too. Even if your physical, you know, your body is protected, there's still, like, a mental thing that can happen.
Oh, God. It's the same with space, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. You know, there's so much mystery thinking about the deep sea. It's obviously an area that's largely untouched by mankind. There's so much mystery down there.
Yeah.
So I think it's the perfect place to have this movie because it feels like they're completely removed from the rest of the world. They might as well be in space in a way.
Yeah.
And unlike space, though, well, I guess similar to space in that the entire outside world, if it gets in, it spells doom.
Yes, yes. you need your stuff to be intact. For sure. Yeah, it is very similar. You're wearing suits. There's pressure stuff to worry about.
Right.
Like, yeah, totally.
I just want to say, like, before we get past the beginning too far, they mention this, like, they talk about this breathing fluid that the military developed so that people can breathe underwater, essentially, without oxygen, so that they can withstand, like, really, it's meant for people that go really, really deep in the water. And apparently this fluid is actually real. Like,
that
it exists.
Is?
Yeah.
That you have to breathe into your lungs and stuff?
Yeah, it exists.
Oh, God.
And they've used it, like, successfully on animals and stuff. But I don't know if they've used it on humans. But the rat in the movie is actually in that fluid.
Are you serious? That's real?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how they got away with making that. Like,
yeah.
I would think nowadays, even though it's safe, I guess, that's probably like a PETA or some sort of violation, you know?
Yeah. In the UK, they remove that scene and they just have their faces like react to it, but they don't actually show the rat.
Interesting. They removed a lot from this movie. So they put out a special edition. I don't know. Have you read about the like long cut? That's like 3 hours.
Yeah, I don't know if you wanted to wait till the end because we kind of compare and contrast to the
That's true.
Ending as we saw it.
So when Michael Biehn is going a little crazy, they kind of spy on him with this mobile camera. And it seems like he's like planning on doing something with the nuke.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he's going to nuke the aliens, basically.
Right.
And so I guess it's...
Well, he thinks it's like a Soviet. He thinks that they're Soviets.
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure if they were trying to imply at all that, like, that was part of the mission, that maybe the government knew about the aliens and they, like, sent him down with, like, the cover of, oh, we got to get it from the Russians. But it's like, no, we'll send these three dudes to nuke the aliens and then maybe get rid of the crew on the Deep Cove or whatever it's called and come back. But they don't harp on that too much. You just know that they're kind of up to no good. There's some, like, hostage situations and stuff with the Navy SEALs versus the oil guys. But man, the Michael Biehn thing culminates with this kind of chase between, they get in these two little pods or vehicles or whatever you want to call them, with the Brigmans and one, right? And Ed Harris, mm-hmm. Sam's wife in there. Mm-hmm. And then and Biehn in another. And I think Bean's got the warhead. And so they're just kind of like chasing each other through the abyss and crashing into each other and stuff. And oh my God, Michael Biehn's death. His pod thing like falls off a cliff, and you see the shot of him just like going off into the distance screaming, like right. this super intense scream, like while the glass is breaking in front of his face, and just all at once the glass breaks and it just like all implodes so violently yeah. with him inside
right.
and it's just one of those deaths where it's like, oh my God, he's super fucking dead.
Yeah, yeah, it's just all the pressure and stuff
yeah. yeah, and it just disappears down to the bottom.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Oh my God. Yeah, that part was crazy.
Yeah.
Which I want to really put over the visual effects.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I was shocked when you told me this was in the late 80s, because it really looked, I thought like maybe the early 2000s, it looked that good. Like,
the lighting, just the, everything looked incredible. The special effects, the even the kind of pre-Terminator 2 kind of CGI.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I know it's a very simple kind of water thing, but it's like people weren't really trying that, or at least with any success really, in big budget Hollywood movies
yeah.
back then.
Yeah, I read that that was like the first scene that they filmed because they wanted to make sure that the special effects team, which was the Light and Magic team,
yeah, yeah.
That they had enough time to complete that.
Yeah, and you can totally see how like how Cameron a few years later would be kind of like encouraged to like, okay, we can make this a big part of the T-1000 character, mm-hmm. of the morphing and yeah. all that. Because, I mean, it's definitely to greater effect in
sure.
T2, but I feel like the Abyss was kind of the, like, testing ground.
It looks incredible. Know? And I'm sure in the course of researching this, you heard about all the horrible production issues
yes.
that went with filming underwater. It just seemed like such an insane feat.
Long, long days, like inside these pools and everything. Ed Harris said, quote, "I'm never talking about it and never will."
Yeah, he almost drowned twice.
Yeah.
The woman who plays Lindsay,
Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Yeah, she had like an emotional breakdown at mm-hmm. one point. It just seemed like a brutal, and there were so many like just production issues in terms of like they had to build this huge tank. At the time, it was the biggest like water tank ever.
Yeah.
And it was so big that it had its own weather system, and they had to deal with, like, managing that and the water getting too murky to film and, like, just the actual weather happening around them. And, like, you know, it has to be pitch black down there. The only light is supposed to come from their ships, but it's hard to keep light from, you know, the
yeah.
outside world permeating in. So they had to come up with these creative solutions, like putting, like, a layer of black beads on top of the surface of the water so that if, you know, it would block out the light, but then if anyone had to come up for air quickly, then
yeah.
it would be easy to, you know, just tear that away. But yeah, it seemed like just disastrous and really, really tough on the actors.
Well, Cameron has such a history of, like, he's very ambitious with his projects.
He's like a perfectionist, right?
Yeah. And like, so I try to think back, like early in his career, Terminator, obviously massive hit, classic. There's a lot of really good practical effects in Terminator. But like he tried stop motion stuff at the end and it's a bit herky jerky. But then Aliens looks good as hell
yeah,
for mid-80s. And then The Abyss looks great. T2 is one of the absolute titans
mm-hmm.
in the history of visual effects. Titanic, I mean, the visuals of that ship and everything
mm-hmm.
near the end, just incredible. Avatar, you know, say
yeah.
what you will about Avatar. Like, he's always trying to push visual effects and filmmaking further and further.
Definitely.
I'm a big James Cameron fan. I remember, I know a lot of people shit on Avatar, But, like, I remember not disliking it. It didn't stick with me.
Yeah, same. I remember watching it. It was, like, an experience. Like, yeah. It was one of those movies I'd never want to see at home. But, like, being in the theater, seeing it in IMAX, I feel like that's how it's intended.
And yeah.
It was an experience. The story itself didn't really stay with me. But all his movies, I feel like, have had, you know, have been pretty exceptional in different ways.
And it's hard to argue that, like, Titanic was the number one movie of all time for a very long time. And then Avatar comes along and beats it, like... Guy had two back-to-back, like, great highest-grossing movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing something right, definitely. Obviously. So I can't speak to his directorial style or how hard he is to work with, but he's got something for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, bold statements here on this movie podcast about James Cameron having something. Let's get to the ending.
Oh, real quick, I just want to mention, this kind of is like a tangent to the production being so tough. The scene where Lindsay is drowns to death, like you see her drown to death.
She goes into like deep hypothermia.
Yeah. And it's pretty insane to see.
Yeah.
It's troubling. And I thought, you know, I was kind of hoping that it wouldn't be all, you know, rosy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, naturally she survives after she's resuscitated by Bud. But apparently she, like, there did so many takes and her, you know, her breasts were exposed, mm-hmm. and her chest was being compressed. And after so many takes, she just had enough of it. And, like, the emotional climax of that movie with Ed Harris screaming for her to, you know, wake up or whatever, he was actually pounding on a sandbag because she wasn't in that shot.
She just refused to be there.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Man, it's crazy that these two, you know, Hollywood stars that have probably been in a lot of stuff were just like, no, I'm not even talking about that movie. That sucked.
Yeah.
Man, so. But the ending, so the aliens play a big role in the ending. Basically, Ed Harris goes down to get the nuclear warhead. He has to employ the water-breathing thing. I think this sequence is cool when he's going deeper and deeper.
Yeah, that was very tense. He can't communicate. He has like a little text thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool because it did that thing like that video game diaries do where like slowly you see him kind of like lose his ability to function.
Yeah, and he's kind of like panicking at times, but then there's times where he's kind of accepting it. And Ed Harris is just, I always love Ed Harris in movies.
Mm-hmm.
He has that intensity too, and he can do a lot with his facial expressions.
Definitely.
And he's really killing it in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's, I mean, I feel like he's one of the best actors out there, and he's still working. You know,
yeah.
I know in Westworld, we watched a Westworld, he was like one of my favorite parts of it.
Oh yeah, totally.
That scene where like after he looks at these two wires that because of the light just look identical, and he like has to cut the right one obviously, and it's impossible to tell, but thankfully he cuts the right one, and then, you know, he resigns himself to the fact that he's going to die down there, and you just see him kind of like sitting back and like looking at, like, there's this huge amount of light coming from a mysterious source, this purple light, which we learn is the alien ship. But him just like sitting back and like looking around and like, you know, if you're gonna die, it's kind of reminds me of Arthur's death from my playthrough of Red Dead, which was like, I made him like a really hero character and he just like looked out into the sunset as he passed. But like, you know, that thing, in the very Hollywood thing of, you know, passing while you're observing something beautiful.
Yeah, and accepting it and being at peace with your death.
Yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, I'm always a sucker for that. But then...
Same as Red Dead.
Yeah, the aliens alien comes and like grabs them and brings them into the ship, and then they're, because they control water, they make like a pocket of oxygen for him.
It's a crazy looking alien too. It's like this translucent glowing thing. It's like there's like more of a traditional alien humanoid thing inside what looks like a cocoon type flying ship.
I don't know if it's like a ship that they're in or if it's like a turtle type situation where like they're kind of a machine organic kind of Metal Gear-esque thing.
Yeah.
It
looks cool though.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It looks very mystical. It looks like what you would think, you know, really insane looking fish at the bottom of the sea would look like, or like alien life forms at the bottom of the sea would look
like. Yeah, like a vampire squid from planet Earth, like the glowy stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, totally.
Yeah, that stuff's really cool.
Yeah, and so here's where the alternate ending kind of varies. So in this version, the theatrical version, the one that's on streaming, they pull Ed Harris into the weird little pocket of water. They kind of show him his own text readouts and stuff like that, like they're trying to communicate. And then they wind up like taking him up in the ship and everything's fine. The longer movie had like 30 minutes almost 3 hours long, had this whole side thing of like nuclear tension and different countries being at odds with each other and war on the surface. And it was going to end with this huge tidal wave,
mm-hmm.
basically just taking over, you know, going over the coastlines and everything. But beforehand, when Ed Harris is down there, instead of just seeing the text screens, he sees a bunch of, like, newscasts.
Yeah, like a montage of all the death and destruction. And yeah. It seems like the aliens trying to say, like, we're going to wipe out humanity because they're so prone to war and stuff like that. But then they show the texts that he sends to his wife that, you know, demonstrate love. And I guess the capacity to love is what ends up saving humanity at the end. But, yeah, personally, I wasn't a big fan of that ending. I thought it was, like I said, a deus ex machina situation where it's like they just kind of come out of nowhere, and not knowing that there was a montage of war stuff, it was like, because obviously when we watched it, I didn't know that was the original planned ending. And it just seemed like kind of random. Like, why'd they take him here? I mean, I get putting him in the pocket of oxygen to save him, but why are they showing him, you know, those text messages? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
And it's kind of for a movie that's pretty dark and tense the whole time. It's kind of a rosy ending.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's not a lot of ambiguity or anything. There's not a lot of loss or anything. It's just like they're all... I do like the idea of the alien ship being so huge that when it surfaces, like, what used to be a huge, normal mm-hmm. human ship is just, like, teetering on it mm-hmm. as a little tiny part of it. Mm-hmm. And everyone's reactions when they're selling it, when they see the spires of the ship come out, is mm-hmm. pretty fun.
Yeah,
it's... It's not my favorite part of the movie, but I don't think it ruined my enjoyment of it, of The Abyss.
Yeah, because all the tension happened throughout it. And at the end, it was like, you know, I feel like it would have been a better ending to just kind of, like, you know, having suggested this supernatural presence, but keep it like a mystery and just have him die peacefully. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
But overall, I think really enjoyable movie.
Really fun to watch.
Yeah, just... hell of a cast. I love the cast. Chris Elliott is one of the dudes on the boat topside.
Which one is that?
He is the comedian who... Oh, yeah.
He's
Cabin Boy.
Yeah,
he was the guy that lived under the stairs on Letterman.
Yes. Now that you say the comedian, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Weird to see Chris Elliott in this James Cameron movie.
He's in Schitt's Creek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He plays the shit guy.
Yes. He had one starring role, and that was Cabin Boy. And, oh, boy. I don't know if you've ever seen Cabin Boy. I saw it near when it came out. It is one of those legendary stupid bad movies. Like, it's a comedy. It's also, I think, the only time Dave Letterman has been in a movie and played someone other than himself.
Interesting.
He plays a sock monkey salesman, and I think it's just he's standing on a dock and he keeps asking Cabin Boy, would you like to buy a monkey? I think that's the extent of his character.
All right.
Yeah. So that's The Abyss. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
It was a fun movie.
Yeah. It was a fun late night movie to watch.
Different for sure. You don't see a lot of movies. I mean, no wonder the production being as bad as it was, but
yeah.
You don't see a lot of movies underwater like that.
I think the closest thing I can compare it to is maybe like a Sphere. I don't know if you ever saw Sphere.
No.
Based on the Michael Crichton book. It's good. I like the book a lot more, but yeah, similar mystery, supernatural, alien stuff underwater. That was the movie had Dustin Hoffman, Sharon Stone, and Samuel L. Jackson.
Interesting.
Great book, though.
Cast.
Great book.
I just can't buy Sharon Stone in, like, anything other than, like, a seductress role.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of her thing. I don't think I've seen a ton of Sharon Stone movies, actually. I never saw Basic Instinct or, what have I seen her? I saw Total Recall, but I don't really remember a ton of it. I don't know a lot of Sharon Stone.
Yeah, I don't really know a lot of Sharon Stone either.
That's The Abyss.
I know her vagina well.
I don't think I've ever seen her vagina.
You never saw that famous scene?
I know the famous scene, but you always see it like parodied on things where they cut away, you know? Or it's in a like, oh, coming to stars, here's this montage of movies. And then you just see like her starting to do it. And then you see Newman just go, oh, you know, so, that's all I know about it. So before we go, Bonk, you got the Hugh game behind you.
I do.
I've been forgetting to pull the cards out prior, so you're getting
live
choosing process
here. Damn, Daniel. That's a meme, right?
I think that was a thing. Is that a thing about a kid's shoes?
I don't know.
Or a kid dancing? I don't remember what that was about. All right. Here's a Hugh card. I've not seen these yet.
Hugh.
Oh, this is really interesting. Okay. These are all pretty good.
Game dance, reading the question.
And that's the theme song. We can keep going.
I was going to stop when you started talking, but you didn't.
I didn't want to cut you off. I didn't want to interrupt
you.
It's
background music.
That'd be rude. Okay. All right. Okay. I know what you're going to say, so don't say that.
Well, why don't you ask something else then? There's three questions.
No, I'm saying don't say the thing that I know you're going to say.
All right.
Who is the most interesting person you have ever met?
What did you think I was going to say? You?
You always say that about me.
Most interesting person?
Yeah. That's a tough one. We don't have to do that one.
Wait, no. We can answer this question. You know, we know so many interesting people.
Yeah.
We're lucky enough to, you know a lot of smart, accomplished people. Yeah, I think Justin, the guy I work with, he used to be a civil rights lawyer, and now he's a video game consultant, and he just lives in Colorado in a giant house. And I think he's a pretty interesting guy. I don't know if he's, you know, there's just so many people that I've thought, like, oh, that person's so interesting. I think my brother Tommy is incredibly interesting.
Yes, he definitely is. I'm trying to think.
Paul Reichert.
I've talked a lot about Paul Reichert.
He's an interesting guy for sure.
Is it weird? So I know a good amount of pro wrestlers who are all fascinating people, but there are only like a handful that I would consider like, you know, close friends and stuff like that. So I'm going to disqualify that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it weird to say Ben Hansen?
He's an interesting guy. Yeah, he's
up there, right?
He's interesting, peculiar. I think is a better word.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Let's bury him. Let it out.
Peculiar, you know.
I put Hansen up there. I'm trying to think of if there's like a slam of someone I know really well.
Someone you know really well.
Because there are like a lot of people that I know, kind of, or we talk on Twitter every once in a while that are fascinating. But like, I'm talking about someone I really have like sat down and had drinks with, and really, you know, figured out what made him tick.
Well, I mean, I feel like anyone who's capable of good conversation is an interesting person. And if that's the criteria, then I think Mike Mahardy is probably one of the more interesting people. Because, like, you know, if I'm hanging out with you and Mike, it's like, if you ask me beforehand, I don't know what we would talk about. But it's like nonstop conversation the whole time. And, like, you would hang out with Mike, like, very frequently. And you always have something to talk about with him.
Yeah, yeah. He's very, very easy to talk to. I think we named everyone that's been a guest on Painting the Stream.
But the real answer for me is obviously you. I know you told me I couldn't, but I mean, let's face it, Dan, you are just so weird and interesting in so many ways.
I didn't ask that to put myself over.
I know, but
I'm just a guy.
Yeah, you're just a guy.
I'm just a guy. My real answer is you, by the way.
Please, I'm so boring.
No, you're not. You're fascinating.
Please.
You're great.
Oh, come on.
That's the Hugh game. You know what's next?
What?
We got to thank our patrons.
Of course.
Everyone that goes to patreon.com/paintingthestream.
Patrons.
Yes. We keep things simple for all of you lovely patrons out there.
Simple.
Simplicity. $5. Yes, it is. Simplicity incarnate. It is $5 a month.
That's only 500 pennies a month.
That is true. 500 Twitch bits is the conversion there. Mm. You get ad-free episodes. You every week. All of them are going to be ad-free. You get your episodes a day early.
That's awesome.
Yep, get it on Saturday instead of Sunday. You have access to Reichert's Market, a Discord that we have created. It is new.
It's new.
It is, so it's going to be, we're going to bring in the Painting the Stream and the Twitch subscribers to all have kind of a place to hang out and chat. We'll do exclusive stuff for, like channels for Bonkus and things like that. And this week on Painting the Stream, exclusive stuff for Painting the Stream. But then we'll have general chat stuff for everyone to chat with. So that's a new thing we're working on that is open now for Painting the Stream patrons. And also, you're going to get your own Bonku.
A Bonku.
Yes, Bonku for you.
For you.
Bonk, do we have one this week?
We sure do.
Who's it for?
This is for our dear friend Wyatt.
Wyatt.
Funny story about Wyatt. When we were kids, every summer we would go to the same mini golf course in North Carolina. And the purveyors of the golf course, we knew because we would see them every year. And they always remembered me because they never met anyone named Bianca before.
Hmm.
But we realized that we didn't know their name. My mom said that the guy's name was Wyatt. So my dad, next time we were there, I guess the guy's parents were overseeing it that day or something. So Grillman was like, "Oh, tell Wyatt we said hi." And they just looked so confused. And my brothers and I, we just died laughing because my dad was just addressing this person that didn't exist. It was a really funny moment in my life that I obviously remember very clearly.
Do you think this guy knows that guy?
Well, I assume it's the mysterious Wyatt that we've always heard about
at the Wyatt Club.
Seen, yeah.
Okay.
I can't imagine there are many Wyatts. That's such a unique name.
I don't know any.
Isn't that like it's Wyatt?
That's as a first name? There's Wyatt Cenac, who used to be on the Daily Show.
I've
Wyatt
only heard his first name. It's just such a unique name. Maybe it is fairly like relatively common, but it is so unique when you think about it.
It's true. It is. You don't hear a lot of them.
Anyway, Wyatt, here's your banku. It started to rain. Wyatt's hair fell on his face, and he looked scary.
Oh wow! Well, I'm sure you looked scary, Wyatt, but you're a very pleasant, pleasant man who we want to thank for being a patron to Painting the Stream. Outside of that, the thanks to the patrons, the Banku for Wyatt.
Thank you, community.
Yes, thank you, community. If you want to give us 5 stars on the old Apple Podcast, if you're enjoying the show, that is great. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. We'll tell you what we're doing the next week, and you can watch it. Got the Patreon. Got Tomanda, thanks for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
There's some good tired dogs sitting here. That's
good
stuff.
They're very good boys.
And we will call that a podcast. And folks,
that's a podcast.
That is a podcast, and we'll see you next week with another podcast.
Bye.
Bye.